What's up, everybody? This is John the Matt Maz from Bad Guy Muay Thai, and we're bringing you a special edition here today. A lot of you guys out there don't know who myself and Chopper Papa Pump Panizai are, so this is going to be a little intro for us to you guys as well. So right now I have the Papa Pump. He's right here.
What's up? Whoop, whoop.
And if people don't know, can you just give us a little background on yourself, Joff? Like, how'd you get the name Papa Pump, and how did you become so good-looking?
Well, let me go over the easier of the two questions. I got so good-looking because when I was a little boy, I would always touch myself. All right, as you can see, I don't take much serious. But straight up, my nickname came from old school wrestling. There was a wrestler called Scott Steiner, and he was called Big Papa Pump. That was his nickname. And he used to always flex his huge biceps, and it looked like he had an egg sitting on top of his bicep. And my mom would always...
What kind of egg? Ostrich egg or like a regular chicken egg?
I would say like the egg that a woman gets fertilized by a sperm. So
terrible.
I know. So basically, my mom hated it. My mom would be like, "Ugh, it's so disgusting." So I started as a joke. I'd be like, "Hey, Mom," and I'd kiss my bicep, and she'd go, "Okay, Papa Pump." And funny enough, it all came together. That became my fight name, and now it's something my mom actually laughs about, because just from that one instance, you know, now I have an internet presence, and people know me as Papa Pump.
Do you really?
I'm kind of a big deal.
And how about your fighting career? I mean, we talk on the podcast a lot about you doing these Muay Thai things and these karate things. Give us a little background on your fight game and your fight life.
All right. Well, basically, I started when I was 16 years old. I competed in Kyokushin Karate, which is bare-knuckle, bare-shin. No punching to the face, but you can kick a knee to the face. No gear at all. And I branched off after a while to what was known as Sato Kaikon under Brian Wright. And this style required attendance in 3 mandatory kickboxing classes a week, because that's a part of their whole curriculum. So I really got into the kickboxing, and as I grew into getting into kickboxing, that led to my evolution into Muay Thai, where I met my other coach, Greg Mihovich. Right now, I got to plug him, undergroundgym.com. And from there, my fight career just kind of took off. I always came into martial arts with the intent to fight. And the more and more I did it, the more and more I realized I wasn't going to stop till I became a world champ.
Yeah, but you always didn't participate in karate and Muay Thai. You know, you have a background in judo, jiu-jitsu, you know, pretty much you've had a few amateur MMA fights as well. So you're not just some run-of-the-mill stand-up martial arts guy.
No, not at all. And it's a good thing you brought that up, because I've told this story so many times, I always leave out my ground game. Started jiu-jitsu also when I was 16. And initially, I loved it.
And you're 28 now?
28.
28.
So you're not new
to the game at all?
No, not at all. So even though it's 12 years, it's been 12 years on and off, probably with no breaks. It's probably like 6 years of consistent training when you take out the breaks. But I play jiu-jitsu. I'm infamous gym hopper. And I also steal children on the side. So obviously, I'm a horrible person for gym hopping. But
you gotta remember, when you gym hop, don't you pay people to be your coaches? They work for you?
Essentially, but, you know, in our community, you gym hop from one place to another. Even if you tell them and you leave respectably and nicely and you pay, you're still a horrible human being. FYI, remember that. Free Carly.
Well, yeah, exactly.
So, you know, my main jiu-jitsu coach is and always will be Joe Viz. He's the guy, you know, he was both of our coaches. He taught us more than jiu-jitsu. He taught us positioning, understanding of the art, respect for the art. I mean,
he's a true Budo person. He's more like our Mr. Miyagi.
Yeah, he's our Mr. Miyagi. I mean, if Greg and Brian were my intro to kickboxing and my senseis, he's my sensei for jiu-jitsu. I mean, even now, I can't stay at a consistent jiu-jitsu place because of the standard that I have with Joe. I mean, Joe basically taught me things that you won't see in most schools. Like, most schools teach paper cutter, YouTube video type stuff, whereas Viz goes, you know what? that doesn't work for you, so this is how I'm going to tailor make it so that move will apply to your body frame and structure and everything.
Yeah, I've been fortunate enough to train all over the world in a bunch of different schools and associations, and to me, Joe's theory on teaching has always been more of I equate it to a graduate level college course.
Yeah, and I was very lucky because, you know, you had Joe for jiu-jitsu and I had Greg for Muay Thai, and even more than Muay Thai, I mean, Greg was my he was my sensei and my big brother when it came to strength conditioning. Right now, you know, every fight I've had, people are fearful of my strength conditioning. They're like, man, this guy's not going to get tired. He's going to keep going until that bell starts, until that bell hits again.
Sounds like bad news for your girlfriend.
Yeah, I know. Bing, ding, ding.
So if you don't mind me asking, if we fast forward, you started martial arts competitively when you're 16. Now you're 28. What are some of the titles you've achieved, as you know, as far as in the ring? And then you have a bunch of professional titles outside the ring as well.
And professional titles meaning like
you know, certifications and things like that as well.
Okay, so let's start with the martial arts. When I was doing knockdown karate, U.S. and World Oyama Karate Champion. There was another organization that's pretty big, Enshin Karate. They have the World Sabaki Tournament. And I was third in that.
Sabaki.
So, you know, I always did very well in these tournament atmospheres. The reason why I never was one of the best in this sport was mainly because I was 138 competing in the lightweight division, which was 155 and under. So I was always the lightest guy in these divisions. So when these guys are cutting 20 pounds and you're eating a steak the morning of weigh-ins just to make weight...
And you were a young guy, too, compared to some. You were fighting grown men.
Yeah, I was 16 fighting, you know, 30-year-olds. So, but with Muay Thai, that's where I really, you know, I wasn't just a second-place finisher or a third. With Muay Thai, my career, like, flourished. I was a East Coast champion, Tri-State champion, North American champion, Northeast champion, and recently a world champion with the WKA. So... You know, I've been very fortunate from having North American titles. Like, it gradually went up. It went, like, tri-state, East Coast, Northeast, National, and then World. So, with that, I did very well. If we go to the academic world, I have a bachelor's in psychology from Monmouth University, master's online in nutrition with Bridgeport. What else can I tell you? I'm CrossFit certified in compound conditioning under Greg Mihovich. I had a NASM, which is NASM. They're one of the most known personal training certifications out there. I got that several years back. Never renewed it because I kind of think the whole program's bullshit, you know, to be frank, or to be Joffer. And
I mean, why would you want to be anybody else besides yourself?
Exactly. So that's pretty much it. That's all that comes off the top of my head. And I'm doing a bachelor's in holistic nutrition under the University of one of those things. I don't even remember which one it is, but I'm completing it currently.
And what are you doing right now as far as martial arts? Are you still actively competing, or are you kind of taking a different role, like a backseat?
I'm definitely taking a backseat. I mean, I'm not a martial artist per se in the sense that I train all martial arts. I'm definitely a specialist. I always train Muay Thai, even till the day I die, I'll be training Muay Thai. I train an hour and a half, 2 hours a day. It's just my passion. Right now, I'm taking a backseat to be more of a coach. Cumulatively with everything, I have like 50 fights. And at this point, I've been very fortunate enough to leave the game relatively healthy. And I think the mistake a lot of people make, what actually influenced me to retire is a UFC fighter, Mac Danzik. And he was on a rough streak, unlike me, like... You know, I'm at the pinnacle of my career. He was having a rough streak of a few losses. He said, you know what? I want to save brain cells. I want to take care of my children. I want to focus on other goals. And it really hit me there that this is a young man's sport. I mean, I look at these guys coming in at 20 years old from Canada who have all the free time in the world to train, whereas I'm working 50 hours a week and I have fighters under me, and it's just not feasible to maintain that kind of level and still be economically efficient and it's hard to be professional in life and still try to make do in the fight world.
Because you've pretty much funded, you know, with maybe the help of your parents and your family, your whole fight career. You didn't have a massive sponsor. You didn't have anybody donating, keep some money to you. So your travel, your training, your doctor bills, your supplements, you paid for yourself.
Yeah, I mean, it was a. It's basically.
It's a hobby, yeah, pretty much.
It's a hobby, and even if you
lifestyle.
Fight, yeah, but even if you fight at the highest level of Muay Thai, you're gonna make what, $500? It's not worth it. Why am I gonna sacrifice 12 weeks? You know, right now, one of my fighters is actually my fiance, Sunny, and luckily enough for this next fight, she doesn't have to cut too much weight, but I always had to cut weight. So
I've seen you go through miserable weight cuts. The miserable weight cut you went through in Italy for Worlds, I caught the tail end of that, and you were like, you're a walking death.
Yeah, it was horrible. And now you got to realize, for me, unlike most of these fighters where it's the last 2 weeks, recently we just had Angela Hill on here where she mentions last 2 weeks, she kind of gets on track and cuts weight. And for me, it wasn't like that. It takes 12 weeks for me to make weight. People never understood that. You can put me in a sauna with any other person, they'll lose 6 pounds in an hour, and I'll lose half a pound.
I remember a few times cutting weight with you, you stopped sweating.
Yeah, my body just stopped sweating, and it's not, you know, people are like, oh, sodium depletion, water intake, this, that. I've done everything by the book, and every weight cut I've done has essentially led me to the point that now my body's so stubborn with it. So, you know, it's not, when you look at it, why am I going to kill myself with weight cuts and this and that when I can give that time to my friends, my family. I can take my girl out for a nice meal. I can
invest. Never call her again.
Never call her again. You know, I can do things now that I couldn't within the last 12 years, and it's about time for a change. And I think people run themselves wild that, oh, you know, I'm a fighter. You know, no, I'm Jaafar Penizai. I'm okay with that. I don't need anybody to see me as a fighter. I know what I accomplished. I'm happy with it. Now it's time to have fun in a different way, which is being a coach and doing this podcast.
I support your moves because I don't want you to be punch drunk.
I just want to be drunk and crunk and slam dunk one day, bro.
You need to grow about 10 more inches.
Yeah, that's what she said. Anything else?
It's pretty much it. I think the fans know everything.
They don't know shit about boxing.
Oh, man. I don't know if they know anything about me, which is fine because I'm kind of
an enigma. So, guys, most people know me from the fight game, but they don't know John the Matt Maz. Now, let's start from there. How did you get the nickname the Matt?
That's actually a funny story. To back up a little bit, I met Jaafar almost like 12 years ago. I walked into a gym to start training some Muay Thai and Jiu-Jitsu. One of my buddies had trained there. So I met Jaafar, and he beat the crap out of me for the first few times that I started training Jiu-Jitsu. Now, Jaafar's about 5'6", 145 pounds. I'm almost 6 foot, 200 pounds. And I looked at him and I said, oh, man, this little kid, I'm going to just walk all over him. Well, if anybody knows martial arts, didn't work out too well for me. So about 10 tap outs later in a 5-minute round, we became good friends. And that's where I met one of their coaches, Joe Viz, who became one of my favorite coaches of all time, one of my really good friends, family member, just like Jav, come over for the holidays, et cetera, et cetera. So maybe about six or eight years ago, there was only a few black belts in New Jersey. Joe was one of them. And there was another, Edson Carvalho was one of the most well-known Brazilian black belts probably in New Jersey, besides maybe like Ricardo Almeida. So one of his other black belts, Mario Lamans, was teaching not too far from where we lived. So we decided to jump over, train a different black belt. And Mario is an awesome guy. He's actually... I don't know, was he black belt under Hickson? Brown belt under Hickson for sure.
Yeah, he had the picture with him everywhere he went.
Yeah, he was a brown belt under Hickson, had lived with him for a while in Brazil. Anyway, so back in his day, he's a badass guy. He's a little older now, and, you know, like anybody else in the sport, kind of takes its toll on your body. So Mario, thick Brazilian accent, I introduced myself to him as John Maz, and I don't know if it was him misunderstanding me or his Brazilian accent, but he called me Da Matt forever. And that nickname kind of just stuck, you know, almost 10 years later.
And it's funny if you guys are listening, because we had a friend at the time named Justin, and he used to call him the Justice.
Justice, yeah. So, I mean, if any of you guys train Brazilians, no knock on them. I love your guys' accent. You guys are awesome, but it was just a, you know, like a cultural kind of just funny nuance.
Before I go on to my next question, let me say this about Mr. Lemos, which he's always been a great guy.
Yeah, I trained with him a couple months ago, and he's still got a great game. He's just, you know, as you get a little bit older, I mean, he's got to be in his late 40s, early 50s.
Now, I mean, when I first met him, the first time I ever met him, and I got to tell this story because I love it, he comes in, I bow to him, he goes, "Ugh, I'm so tired. I was hitting the puss with my girlfriend. Ah, I'm too tired to teach." But he taught an awesome class, even though he hit the puss.
Yeah, I mean, that's great for him. I'm proud of him.
So besides, myself, you met Dojo Viz. Where has your martial arts training basically taken you? People know you as the world traveler. Where have you gone throughout the world? What arts have you trained throughout your travels?
So I'm like most kids that grow up in the mid to late 80s, I was infatuated with like Surf Ninjas, Three Ninjas, Bruce Lee, Best of the Best.
Backdoor Sluts 9.
Yeah, you know, all those awesome movies. I love Best of the Best. That was like one of my favorite movies, and I love like karate and taekwondo growing up. So being a kid, I trained, you know, taekwondo and karate. I earned like I call it like a kid's black belt in karate back in the day.
Whoa, bro, you know karate?
Yo, I know more than karate.
Oh, snap.
You know, breaking boards, jumping over stuff, hitting like kick shields, all that kind of cool stuff when you're a kid. I kind of took a break from that when I was in college. And then after college, I did get back into jiu-jitsu and kickboxing and judo when I met Joff. But I spent about 4 years training here in New Jersey. And then I was able to take a job out in California, up in Mammoth Lakes, California, actually, a ski resort. And I found a judo and jiu-jitsu club there. It was I believe it's a Hoyler affiliate. So Hoyler had come up a few times, and then since California now is such like a huge hotbed of martial arts and jiu-jitsu, we had a really eclectic group of people come up there, all kinds of people from 10th Planet, from Hickson's Gym, from Kron's Gym, tons of people from Gracie Baja. So that was kind of cool. It was more like a club. It wasn't like a defined like sensei or coach. Everybody was kind of just bringing their own styles and own games. One of the guys I had that was teaching there and working there, he was a collegiate judo player, so that was kind of cool, bringing in like a different style that you don't usually get in jiu-jitsu schools. So I was fortunate enough to train in Mammoth Lakes for about a year, and that was awesome. The facility was really nice. It was inside like a really top-notch health club, so it had like saunas and lap pools, and it was also at altitude. It was about at 8,500 feet, so that was amazing. After I left there, I moved back down to San Diego. And I was training at one of the Gracie Baja facilities, and that was really cool. I'd never trained at a school with so many members and so many black belts. There was probably about 10 black belts that would rotate into there that were students, as well as, you know, two black belt instructors. And one of the black belt instructors is a pretty famous guy, Nelson Montero. He has placed in Abu Dhabi quite a few times. He gave the sheikh that started Abu Dhabi his black belt. And, you know, he's been around in the game for a long time. So that was pretty cool. After that, I kind of took a hiatus. I traveled a bunch, and I had moved to Colorado, and there was no training facilities there. But I did get a job in the last few years that requires me to be on the road pretty much all the time. So I started taking my gi with me everywhere I went. In the last 3 years, I've been fortunate enough to train in, you know, Israel, Brazil, all over the United States. I've trained at the Kodokan in Japan doing some judo. So for me, my martial arts journey has literally been a journey. And, you know, right now I'm on a little bit of a hiatus. I have a few injuries that I've been nursing, and I'm a little bitch. But I'm finally starting to feel better. I'm finally starting to get back into it. I'm looking to start training some more, maybe like in New York City. And just anywhere else, you know, anybody that wants to invite me to come train and hang out. I'm going to go probably to Hawaii and see one of my buddies, Jason Bitzer, who we'll have on the podcast, and train with some of those guys over on the island. So that'd be pretty fun. I mean, for me, I'm like Joffer. I'm a gym hopper now. I don't really owe my loyalty to anybody. I pay my mat fee and I move on. I respect everybody, and I treat the gym as I would my own home or my own place. So that's not really an issue, but it's hard for my job. I'm on the road pretty much all the time to just, you know, 5 o'clock every day, Monday through Friday, I'm at the same gym on the same mat.
You know, I think a lot of people don't realize about yourself and me, we've been in the game for a long time. You know, both of us with jiu-jitsu, me with striking. And, you know, you got to keep it new. You got to keep it fresh. And we're the kind of guys that when we go into a gym, people want us to stay because we're nice. We're friendly. We give everything we got to the instructor. We give everything we got to all the other people there. And, you know, we have a lot of the same similar views. You know, I wanted to ask you this, and then I'll kind of chime in. What do you feel about gym hopping? What are the advantages, and why do you think people get bent out of shape about it?
You know, people forget that martial arts is a martial art. It's a spiritual thing. But at the end of the day, that building costs money. That coach has to pay himself, you know, take care of his wife and his kids and his employees. And it is a business. I do understand that. And for you to just go and pay $20 or whatever the mat fee is or the month fee is, they're not holding on to their income from that person. You know, if you pay $150 a month and you go for 12 months, you know, those add up to be thousands of dollars a year plus t-shirts and equipment and gear that you buy. I understand this is a business. But at the same time, it becomes a little bit monotonous going to the same gym. Some gyms attract great talent. You got huge schools like Marcelo Garcia in New York City or Henzo Gracie or, you know, any like the gym you belong to, Evolution. People rotate through there. You have people that come and visit you, and you're getting different talent. You're getting different fighters. That's awesome. But some of those smaller jiu-jitsu schools or the Muay Thai schools, you kind of see the same people and the same talent come through there all the time. I've been fortunate enough to get smashed by some of the best people in the world. And to me, that's a humbling experience. So you have to gym hop. You have to go see what's out there. You can be loyal to your coach or your sensei or, you know, your professor. Like, I'll always be loyal to my coach, Viz. If anybody ever asks me what affiliation I always tell them, I'm affiliated with Joe Viz, and I'm proud to say that because that guy is a martial artist. I could be proud to say I'm affiliated with somebody like that. Do you want to be proud to say you're affiliated with somebody who's involved in, like, a rape scandal or money laundering or fist fighting and in the street or in the bars? I particularly don't. And, like, we had Chase on the podcast, and he said something pretty profound. You know, he mentioned that there's too many fighters and not enough martial artists. And I agree. There's not enough martial artists. It's not always about the money. It should be about the community, and it should be about enriching people with your martial art, whether they want to stay for one class or if they want to stay for a million classes. And don't forget, like I said, it is a business, and I think that jiu-jitsu as a whole and its popularity reign in the last 5 years with mixed martial arts has become a huge business. You know, you see people – I posted this link on Facebook the other day. I called it the degradation of the modern BJJ black belt. There was a video that they said was from Brazil, and it was this blue belt just completely smashing this black belt. He owned him. He took him down. He mounted him. He controlled the whole fight. Yeah. You know what? It is a sport competition, but you know what? To me, I still hold a black belt in jiu-jitsu, a very high regard in martial arts. Like, there should be no way that somebody who is of a lower rank like that should dominate you. Can a blue belt submit a black belt? Maybe catch him with something? Yeah, but that's to me like lightning striking twice. There's no way that should happen, and there's no way that guy should have let him run game on him like that. So, it is a business. Kind of digressing a little bit, but I do understand why people are doing what they're doing with handing out, I think, too many promotions.
Keep them there. Give them a reason to stay.
Oh, of course. Like, I want to promote people. I want people to stay. I also want people to see people progress and become a proficient martial artist. That's amazing. But at what point does that become just too ridiculous? Like, how many are – I mean, there's a lot of people out there that are black belts, legit black belts, like, awesome. But to me, there's just much more than being a black belt. You can know every single move and smash everybody, but are you a good person? Can you teach it? Do you live what you say? And I think there's a bigger picture than just being good or winning tournaments or smashing everybody in your school.
So, you know, I want to add a few things.
Sorry, it's a little long-winded.
Don't worry about it. You know, when people ask me who my most influential Thai boxing coach is, I say Greg Mihovich. You know, if that guy was still doing 6 days a week Muay Thai training, it would be him that I was training with every single day. But right now with the business, I work with him. You know, I'm very fortunate. I'm one of the personal trainers at his gym. We're very well-rounded now. And I like his approach because he doesn't allow himself to get burned out from he doesn't let himself get burnt out with his daily grind. If somebody asked me who my most influential jiu-jitsu coach is, it's Joe Viz. However, the one thing they both taught me is one day you're not going to be a competitor. That's the number one thing both of them told me. They said, Joff, branch out. They both encouraged me to branch out and said, train everywhere. Learn all you can. Because I think both of them could tell, you know, your calling is going to be being a teacher. I mean, already I've been, you know, thank God I've been fortunate enough. Two of my students have become North American champions. And I can teach every single style because I've been exposed to so many great teachers. You know, would I have one coach in an ideal world? Yeah, it would have been great. But the two coaches I had encouraged me to do this gym hopping fiasco that a lot of people hate.
And Joff, and to just butt in real quick, how many coaches have you also trained with at other gyms that would have encouraged that? Not many.
Not many. And I'll
if any.
Not many at all. And you know what? I'm going to go right into it. I'll tell you why I left a lot of these gyms. You go in, and you to them are a meal ticket. I don't care what anybody says. You are a meal ticket to these guys. You're a fighter. You are free publicity. And I used to train in Brooklyn. I paid $40 a day to go to Brooklyn. You're telling me I didn't pull my weight? I spent $20 on gas minimum, spent $20 on tolls, plus the hours lost of my day. You're telling me I'm not loyal? I did that for 2 years. You know, so the issue I have with this is that it becomes unrealistic to be at one place economically. I mean, we're in Jersey. Maz, you just mentioned going to Marcelo Garcia's or Henzo's in New York. That's going to not only take time out of your daily grind, but it's going to take money out of your pocket.
If I was to take the train there, it would cost me probably almost $40 round trip, and that's not even grabbing like something to eat or something to drink on the way home.
So that's what makes me laugh about all these guys that call me a gym hopper. They don't also see that, wow, for 6 months, he sacrificed to be there. And a lot of the times, whether you like it or not, it's the truth, I become the top dog at that gym. And if you don't like it, I'm sorry. I'm a very honest person. John has been with me when I go to these sparring days. I do become one of the most well-known guys there. I get asked to teach, and I didn't go there to teach. And I love everybody I meet. I respect everybody I meet. But I'm not going to lie to you guys on this podcast and say it's something different than it is. Now, I went to Kentucky to my coach, Eric Haycraft. That is a man I would follow till the end of my martial arts career. Why am I not there? Because I live in Jersey. How am I going to pack out and move down there and make it work economically? You know, I finally found something that would work, but it's a distance away. So could Joff, you know, could myself stay loyal to one gym? Absolutely. Has there been something local that has made me want to stay? No.
Did you ever think about opening up your own facility and trying to attract good, high-quality people to your gym, or do you feel like people that are the same mindset as you would just pass through like you pass through other gyms?
You know, I got to say, individuals like you and myself were kind of free thinkers. You know, we were exposed to good teachers like Joe and Greg that wanted us to not only just, oh, you guys are going to be competitors. No, they didn't look at us as competitors. They looked at us as, if you want to grow as a martial artist, you got to go everywhere. The reason why I'm not really too interested in growing a school is I have no interest in producing a fight team. You know, what I'm doing right now is very fulfilling. Being a personal trainer, working at the Underground Gym in Red Bank and Apollon Gym in Edison. I like helping that 50-year-old woman who came in who always wanted to learn how to throw a punch, but her mom and dad wouldn't let her sign up for karate or kickboxing. So right now, I'm very fulfilled doing what I want. Whereas when you really start trying to open up a gym, I see the stress that these guys are going through. And I understand why they want you to be locked down members, but I don't want to be them. I don't want to be like, you better sign that 1 year contract. I don't ever want to be pushy.
What if we started something like I've always wanted to call it a martial arts co-op, where you just paid yourself for the time that you taught. So say the rent was $2,000 a month, plus insurance, plus the cost of operating costs. and you had 100 members, and you can get that cost down to $30 a person.
See, that would be an amazing concept. The issue that you run into is, you know, you got to find a facility that would kind of make it feasible. You know, if you can get a facility that's feasible, you get people who would be committed to it. But, you know, Maz, how many of our peers now don't even train? Me and you are like the 2%.
You know? Yeah, I mean, I'm not training jiu-jitsu and judo all the time, but I'm still doing conditioning that's specific, sport-specific, you know, like rubber bands and kettlebells and things like that. But, yeah, like, I don't get on the mat as much as I used to because I think it's ridiculous to pay $200 a month to go train at a school that's only open up 5 days a week on the hours that they say it's open.
And I agree with you.
If I was going to pay $200 a month, I could go to Equinox and it's open like, you know, 24 hours a day in New York City, and I could have a sauna and a massage as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's another thing. You make a really great point is these places want you to stay and yada, yada, yada. $200 for an hour and a half class, which, you know, I'm going to break it down for you guys. In New York, there's only 1 hour classes, point blank, whether it's jiu-jitsu or Muay Thai. Let me break down what you're paying $200 for. Muay Thai, 15-minute warm-up, whether it be jump rope, calisthenics, yada, 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 whatever it may be, the reach around. Okay, then you do 30 minutes of pad work where 15 minutes you hold and 15 minutes they hold. I don't care what anybody says. If you go specifically for yourself to the gym, you just spent 15 minutes holding pads for somebody else. You are not working. People like to make that debate. My opinion, it's not working. I don't want to hear your end of the story. That's my opinion.
Also, too, you could get partnered up with some rookie
who doesn't know how to hold.
Out of shape. And my thing, too, is, you know, from training with Viz, we were always taught to come into class in shape. So
yeah,
doing 20 minutes of conditioning to me is 20 minutes of wasting my time. I'm already in shape.
Yeah, so, I mean, going back to that, like, you could have a partner who doesn't know how to hold. So not only did you waste time holding for 15 minutes, you wasted time when it was your turn. Then the last 15 minutes is, you know, your abs and your this and that. So you wasted time there. You're paying $200 a month for that. Then with jiu-jitsu, John just made the best point. You go to these classes that maybe an hour and a half. Let's stick to the hour protocol because that's how it is in New York. You do a half an hour of your shrimps and you're this and you're that. And, you know, that's great if you're a beginner. But when you're a little bit more advanced to that purple belt and above area, you only have that 1 hour. You want to do your drills. You want to get your rolling in. So they wasted essentially 15 to 20 minutes warming you up. Then you do 15 to 20 minutes of drills, and then you do 15 to 20 minutes of rolling, and there's no objective in the rolling. So realistically, it's blind guidance. You know, I'm not saying that's every school.
No, it's not every school. It's some schools.
But I don't think that that is worth $200. I mean, I am a world champion in kickboxing. When I open a school one day, which absolutely could happen, I'm not charging $200. I'm trying to do what Coach Haycraft's doing in Kentucky with that fair $80 a month, and he's got an amazing schedule. That's how I want to be. I know some people's not economically efficient, but that's the template I want to follow.
Well, in Kentucky, you got to remember that the cost of living is way cheaper.
And so the fried chicken's amazing.
You know it.
I mean, what's your take on this? I mean, really, being that you've been in the game as long as I have with this, I mean, how do you feel about these absurd prices and what people are demanding?
You know, just to go back to my buddies at Mammoth Lakes. So it was at this place called Snow Creek. Snow Creek is actually a really nice spa. You get massages and, you know, your day of beauty and all that. They had indoor and outdoor pools, tennis courts, racquetball courts. It was a huge basketball courts, everything. It was a massive facility. Do you know how much they charge you a month to go there and do jiu-jitsu? And you could use all the other facilities in there.
How much?
Oh, I want to say it was like $45 a month if you were a member, if you were an employee at the Mountain, and if you were like a private, you know, a local resident, I think it was like $60 or $80. So not only were you getting jiu-jitsu a few times a month, they also had some striking, some rudimentary striking kickboxing classes. They weren't bad. It was more like some cardio kickboxing. They also had yoga, tons of other spinning. They also had world-class they have the world-class distance runners up there. This guy named Meb, you might have heard of him. He won the New York City Marathon, I believe it was in 2009, 2010. Ryan Hall, Dina Castor, all very famous runners. And, you know, they would go in there and they would go with the Mammoth Lakes Running Club and they would help out anybody who wanted help. So you're getting professional instruction from some of the best people in the world pretty much for free, and then you're paying about $60 a month to use an entire spa facility. So you want to go train jits for an hour, and then go hit the sauna, or go use a beautiful locker room, or take a shower, or use the steam rooms or anything. Maybe go lift some weights if you want to do some squats and swing some kettlebells. That was all available for $60 a month.
You know, and I get it. I understand the whole concept that, hey, we're in Manhattan. It's really expensive to pay rent here. And, you know, we need this much money. But let's look at a normal just gym people go to lift weights. Retro Fitness, multi-million dollar company. Okay, so their goal is to bring in the masses. Why don't we do that with martial arts? I mean, we're literally making it an elitist group. You know how many kids, when I worked at a martial arts school, and I'm going to say the name because it robbed a lot of people of an amazing martial arts experience, Satori Academy, okay? I worked at this place, and I'll tell you, a lot of people left there very heartbroken because they couldn't afford to pay rent. They couldn't afford to pay the fees of $200 a month. And you know what? It's absurd. We let such amazing people pass by.
It's karate.
Yeah, and it's karate. And, you know, it used to break my heart because I was the head instructor. And I would see kids that genuinely I knew couldn't afford it, but they would do anything they could to be members. They just couldn't allocate that kind of money. And I understand what it's like because, you know, I had to hustle too, just like yourself, you know. So that's my problem. We're not allowing those kind of people to join, and we're basically only bringing in professionals, which is great. You know, I have no knocking, you know, doctors and lawyers. I love those kind of clientele. But why can't that college kid who's struggling also be a member? We're cutting them off.
Yeah, it's kind of funny too. I was looking up some jiu-jitsu schools when one of my friends was living in Malibu. And there's some jiu-jitsu schools over there that are even more expensive. Some of those over there are like $250 a month. I'm not going to name names, but...
Name them.
I will not name any names. If you want to, you know, go on the internet and look it up, I mean, it's pretty much there for...
I just crapped on my old job, bro.
Well, I never trained there, so I'm not going to say. Anyway, but, you know, I understand there's a clientele for that, but at what point is there a diminishing return?
I mean, Maz, if you look back to when you were in college, all right, realistically, these numbers, you got to understand, when me and Maz were in college back in the day, Maz was like 4 years my senior. These numbers didn't exist. They did not exist. It was, what, $100 a month, would you say?
Yeah, I remember the one school you're at was like $100 a month for unlimited. And maybe some of the coaching staff and other martial arts weren't the best there. But, you know, we had a really good judo and really good jiu-jitsu coach and a really good boxing coach. I'll give him a shout-out. Terry Fisher, you the man.
And, you know...
But that gym had everything. It had a shower and locker room facility for men and women. I mean, I'm not really into machine weights, but it had a ton of machine weights, treadmills, stair climbers, elliptical, stationary bikes. It had a big mat. It had a ring. It had heavy bags. You know, it had a bunch of equipment. And if you want to go there and, like, lift or get some cardio on before class, after class, in the middle of the day, yeah, that was available for you. You know, now some of these martial arts schools are like, you can only pretty much use the facility when there's a class. You can't just go, like, do your own conditioning workouts.
Yeah, yet it'll be 2.5 times more than we were paying. And that's my whole thing. You got to realize, I understand the economy was better then. I understand that. But, so the economy went down. It got harder to make a living. So what do? We charge more? And it drives me nuts. It drives me nuts because basically we're making these half-ass instructors more money. And don't get me started on the quality of the instruction we have now because, you know what, we'll go into it in a little bit. But worse instruction, made-up certifications, black belts just because of who they know, and they charge 2.5 times more than we were paying back in the day, and we had the best instructors.
Yeah, I don't know what the solution is. I think mixed martial arts is kind of hitting a huge apex right now. Is mixed martial arts going to continue to be as big as it is, or is it going to falter a little bit? I mean, jiu-jitsu has become huge in the last 4 or 5 years with the advent of the UFC. Everybody wants to train jiu-jitsu and Muay Thai and kickboxing. So are we going to see – I mean, the UFC has got a ton of steam. Bellator, there's in New Jersey, in New York, there's a ton of smaller promotions that are huge. So are they going to peak out, and then we're kind of going to see the dying of maybe martial arts a little bit, like we kind of did in the mid to late 90s where mixed martial arts and jiu-jitsu wasn't that big? I mean, like, judo went through a resurrection and then went through a valley, and now it's kind of coming back a little bit with some of the people that are in the spotlight being Olympic athletes and kind of killing it in mixed martial arts. But I think what's going to have to happen is it's going to have to lose some steam. It's going to have to lose some popularity, and then it'll kind of equal off a little bit once it kind of goes through that recession.
The issue is there's people who started with me and Maz, and, you know, I got to tell you, it's ridiculous to see that these people not only are black belts in jiu-jitsu, which, you know what, they put their time on the mat. Is 6 years enough time to get a black belt in jiu-jitsu? Not my opinion. But hey, they lived on the mat, yada, yada, yada. But really, it's like you look at Joe Viz, okay? And we keep talking about this Mr. Man Joe Viz, and you guys will get to know him in the future. It took him how many years, Maz? How many years to get his black belt?
Well, not only did he get his black belt, but his lineage. To me, that's the most important, is where your lineage is from. You know, this guy is one person removed from the original Gracie family of his lineage to a black belt. So, I mean, he was promoted by Hickson, and then he was promoted by Edson Carvalho, which studied directly under, is it Carlos Gracie, maybe?
Carlos Gracie.
And he's also a sixth dan in judo. So the credentials of the people that promote you, to me, mean even more. Are you going to get some black belt over the internet, which I think is cool that you can learn jiu-jitsu over the internet, but what's your lineage? Where does it come from? How deep is that martial art rooted? That's, to me, is more important. Like, could you go to school and train there for a year and get promoted real quick to purple belt, brown belt, and then maybe black belt? Yeah, probably. Are you a badass fighter? Probably, yeah, jiu-jitsu fighter, jiu-jitsu practitioner, whatever. But what's the lineage? How close is it to the source? That, to me, is most important.
I agree. I mean, an issue we just talked about jiu-jitsu. When you look at Muay Thai, we have these instructors that have no fights, okay? Point blank, they've never fought. You know, they've done some mystery smoker that you can never find on Google, which this is the age of technology. If I can't type your name in Google and find something on you, you're lying. Or we got the dude who, you know, paid $5,000 to get a certification from a dude who means nothing, and now he's a crew. I mean, I had a lot of talks with Eric Haycraft about this, and it basically became a means to an end, a way to just make money, is to say you're an instructor and, you know, you make up this lineage. Back in the day, you only became an instructor if you spent that time as an apprentice, whether it was in judo, jiu-jitsu, whether Muay Thai, I don't care what it was, you were an apprentice. You spent a lot of time learning from a master, somebody who walked away before you, aka a sensei, and then you earned your stripes. You earned them. You took your lickings. You got beat up. Sometimes you were the hammer, sometimes you were the nail. These guys don't want to take that step. They don't want to pay their dues, and they'd rather spend $5,000 or make up a resume, and that's what drives me nuts about martial arts nowadays.
Well, to me, the business aspect of what's making it so ridiculous, I mean, I don't really want to name names, but the whole controversy with the MMA millionaires.
Are you familiar with that? Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, Lloyd Irving.
Lloyd Irving, yeah.
And so many people bought into that, and if the sad thing is, if you've ever taken a 100-level business course in any accredited university anywhere in the world, he wasn't telling you anything that is some secret information. So, you know, it's kind of ridiculous that people buy into that. I understand why they did. I mean, he does run some successful academies, but, you know, there's been a pretty great cloud over the name of that facility, those brands.
Well, you know what the issue is, too, is that individuals start a martial arts school without really understanding what it takes. So they think, oh, I'll spend money, I'll become a member of this, you know, business, like example, the MMA millionaires, and it's a business in a box, and it'll run itself. And that's not true. Anything you do, I mean, me and Maz right now, we're busting our butt for this podcast. Anything that you want to be successful in is going to take so many man hours and so many hours that, you know what, you don't get paid for.
Yeah, right now I keep telling Joffre that this is just a really expensive hobby.
Yeah, and that's the thing. These guys don't understand that if you want to do it the right way, you're going to have to spend time where you literally could have been with your wife or your husband or your kids.
Or training jiu-jitsu today on the mat.
Yeah, or training, but you took it and spent it on your business. People don't want to do that. And it really weeds out the successful gyms over the non-successful gyms. The only issue that we're having is some of these successful gyms that started with really good ambitions and goals sell out.
I agree. And it just sucks now that a lot of these schools are just becoming promotional items for fighters.
Absolutely. I mean, the truth is you're basically taking in, you know, what was about good intent, which was about, you know, helping out mom, dad, brother, sister, helping out the whole nuclear family.
Oh, of course.
And now it's basically changed to, okay, how can we make ourselves look more MMA?
Yeah, well, I mean, like, just take a jiu-jitsu school, for example. Now, jiu-jitsu is maybe arguably one of the best bases for mixed martial arts, right?
Mm-hmm.
You get a school, you get a bunch of amateur fighters, you get a bunch of pro fighters, people come into your gym. Now you have 20 people competing at any given time during the year, right? Now what are you doing? You're a promotional vehicle. Yeah, you're almost guilted into supporting the guys that train at your school. Buy my tickets. Buy my shirts. Buy my sponsors. Take my photos. Go here. Come to this grappling tournament. If you don't go to the grappling tournament, I'm going to be so mad at you. Wear my shirt. Wear my patch. Buy my shirt. Buy my patch. Buy my overpriced uniform. Buy my uniform that might not be that high of a quality and you're paying top dollar for. So I understand it is a business, but at what point is that business becoming, to me, slightly unethical?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it really crosses the limit and almost becomes robbery in a sense. I mean, you do a jiu-jitsu tournament. You know how many jiu-jitsu tournaments I've done, Maz?
Zero.
Zero.
Same here.
And you know what's the funny thing is?
175 to compete. Yeah. In some of these larger grappling associations. And $150 maybe.
Yeah, $150.
And tell sometimes it's single elimination.
Exactly. And I'll say, I am a competitor by nature. I mean, whether I'm doing Muay Thai or I'm playing chess, I play for keeps. That's just it. I play to win. And I don't want to spend $150 to compete in something that's not run well. And then you're telling me that I may only have one match that lasts, you know, I believe a jiu-jitsu match is what, like 4 minutes, 5 minutes?
Yeah, depending on the division.
I mean, right now, I can call the head of Friday Night Fights and become the main event for their next event and compete in front of 1,000 people. Yet when it comes to a grappling tournament, you want me to pay $150 for 4 minutes for the most poorly run event I could go to? Get out of here. I mean, I think all of you guys that are doing it, I really respect that you have the guts to compete.
Oh, don't get me wrong. A lot of people train hard for local grappling events, whether it's a Naga or Grappler's Quest or maybe a small promotion.
Yeah.
Even the guys like, you know, the last night in the Metamoris, those guys are getting paid, obviously. But as an amateur competing in a martial art, it's an expensive hobby.
Yeah, I mean, it's
one. You have to pay for a hotel room if it's a little further. Yeah, a hotel room, a flight, gas, car.
And here's my thing.
You're not getting sponsored. Who's sponsoring you?
I mean, I completely understand, you know, charging for an event because you're paying for the staff. Completely. But let's be honest. If there's 500 competitors, we can afford to put the registration for an event at $20 to $25 a person, not $150.
Or how about a cash buyout for some people who win a certain division?
Yeah, give back to the event. I mean, what, you win an expert division in a Naga and all you get's a dumb little samurai sword? I mean, classic. What's that about? Yeah.
No, it's cool that your school has a whole bunch of medals and samurai swords and belts on the wall. That's awesome. That means your coach is an awesome sport jiu-jitsu coach. But what does that all really mean?
Yeah, and that's where it really comes down to. Everything in martial arts has not become about the love of the art. It's really now become, how can I make money? How can I keep, you know, Tom and David and all these guys to stay members? And what can I do just to grow myself? And if they quit tomorrow, if I sign 10 more, I won't even care about that individual leaving.
So that's our rant on martial arts and a story of ourselves. We got a few really big things coming up for the podcast. And in the next few weeks, we have an awesome guest that just appeared on our podcast, Donna Castrino. If you don't know who she is, you better download it and learn, because she is the queen of kettlebells. She's got a couple of big things planned for the summer. We're going to cue you guys up in when we know more. Next up, we got Jason Bitzer, Hawaiian waterman, martial artist, just kind of a jack of all trades. He knows everybody, knows everything. He's so cool. He's one of my good friends. Me and Joffrey trained with him for a long time, over the last 10 years. After that, we have the lovely Phoenix Carnevale.
She's so hot right now.
She is a very well-known and respected commentator She's a kind of a really cool character in the mixed martial arts commentating world. She's interviewed people like Matt Serra, Enzo Gracie, Pat Barry, Jaffa Panizai.
So wet right now.
Anyway, so she's up next. And then after her, we have Sean Fagan, the Muay Thai guy. Everybody knows who he is if you know anything about the Muay Thai industry. He's actually fighting in
Thailand. And if you don't know, he won. Second round knockout.
Spoiler alert. So that's what we have lined up. Next after that, we have Angela Overkill Hill. She's looking to be on the upcoming season of The Ultimate Fighter. So we hope she gets it. And we have a few special guests kind of lined up after that.
Hopefully Denzel Washington.
We're working on a few sponsors. Looks like, can we say who's going to sponsor us?
Maybe we should hold on to that for a little bit.
It's a really famous Brazilian company.
Yes, so we'll hold on to that. And last segment I want to do right before we give let go. Shot out of a cannon. Maz, name one person you hate.
Oh, man. You know what? I dislike a lot of people. I don't hate anybody.
Okay, name one person you severely dislike.
You know,
put you on the spot.
Somebody I severely dislike. I'm actually a pretty nice guy, contrary to popular belief. But, you know, anybody who would do harm to my friends or my family, this it could be anybody, a stranger. I'll hunt you down. I have a very special set of skills.
He's being nice. So next time we do this, he's going to ask me a random question.
Joff, what is your favorite lingerie item?
Nail polish.
What? Okay, on that note, thank you guys very much. Bad Guy Muay Thai.
Peace.
Thanks.
Now let's get it all in perspective. For all y'all enjoyment, a song y'all...